Welcome to Tea and Strumpets, a Regency romance review. I'm Zoe.
And I'm Kelsey.
And we're here today to talk about a book that we picked from our governess trope list episode. And I can't believe it took us however many list episodes that we did to finally realize we should be picking a book from it.
I know, right? That was our brilliant stroke of genius. I think it's really funny because every time we've done those lists, especially if we had one where we're like, oh, that sounds really interesting. We should read that.
Yeah, we should have. And we should have talked about it on the podcast. And we're doing that today. And I am so glad we did.
Yes. And I am also introducing a new thing on the podcast, which is New Author November.
Yes.
Yes, because this was a new author for both of us. Strangely enough, we know she's like a giant in the genre, and yet neither one of us read her books before.
You know, there are so many books to read, and sometimes like you just kind of like miss something, and it's really great when it gets in your path and kind of shows you what everyone was talking about.
Yes. And then we also have our next book this month is a patron pick. Yay. Mm-hmm. And that was an author too that neither one of us had read. So I decided we should put them together and have New Author November.
I am so excited for that. I'm like super excited for next November. It's going to be hard as we're planning out our episodes to like be like, wait a minute, we should hold that
we
one
need to
till
hold
November.
Off. Hold till November. Yeah, but I think it's really interesting because, I mean, we read new authors all the time, but I think it's also a nice time to dedicate time to new authors. So now we know for sure, even if next year, whatever we decide to do, whether it's favorites, whatever, we'll talk more about that another time, maybe later today, about how we're going to plan next year. But regardless of that, in November, we will read something new to us.
Yes. Yeah. And that is an important distinction, right? This is new authors to us and / the podcast. Authors that we have not highlighted or really are familiar with. Doesn't necessarily mean they're new to the scene or this is their first book, because that is certainly not the case with Amanda Quick, but it is new to us, new to the podcast, and hopefully something new to you guys.
Yes. So today, based on our governess read, we decided to go with the one that flipped the trope a little bit.
Yes.
So we had a male tutor and a female employer. And so today we're reading Deception by Amanda Quick.
And as this is the first time that we are reading an Amanda Quick, we do have her biography for you all. So, the author of a string of New York Times bestsellers, Jane Ann Krentz, uses three different pen names to write each of her three worlds. As Jane Ann Krentz, her married name, she writes contemporary romantic suspense. She uses Amanda Quick for her novels of historical romantic suspense. Jane Castle, her birth name, is reserved these days for her stories of futuristic, paranormal, romantic suspense.
Is Jane Castle not the best name ever?
Oh, it's amazing. I mean, all of them are fantastic. And
I just like that was her name. Also, she spells it Jane, J-A-Y-N-E, which I think just makes it even better.
Mm-hmm. She says, quote, I am often asked why I use a variety of pen names, she says. The answer is this, is that this way readers always know which of my three worlds they will be entering when they pick up one of my books. In addition to her fiction writing, she is the editor of and a contributor to a nonfiction essay collection, Dangerous Men and Adventurous Women, Romance Writers on the Appeal of Romance, published by the University of Pennsylvania Press. Her commitment to her chosen genre has been strong from the very beginning of her career. Quote, the romance genre is the only genre where readers are guaranteed novels that place the heroine at the heart of the story, Jane says. These are books that celebrate women's heroic virtues and values, courage, honor, determination, and a belief in the healing power of love. She earned a BA in history from the University of California at Santa Cruz and went on to obtain a master's degree in library science from San Jose State University in California.
Oh, my neck of the woods!
Before she began writing full-time, she worked as a librarian in both academic and corporate libraries. She is married and lives with her husband, Frank, in Seattle, Washington. And there is a Faded Mates interview with her this year, which is part of their Trailblazer series that was from January of this year. So you should check that out if you want to hear straight from her yourself.
I think you absolutely should. I love her quote about the female heroines and heroic virtues and values, courage, honor, determination, and a belief in the healing power of love. Ah,
it's very good.
So perfect.
And yeah, I believe her books kind of all are intertwined, even though the worlds are all separate. I believe there is some sort of like interlacing. Like if you read her contemporary versus her historical, there are like Easter eggs in them. I can't be 100% sure, but I'm pretty sure that I read that somewhere or someone told me. Anyhow, shall we talk about our tropes today?
Let us talk about our tropes today. So today we have, as mentioned before, a teacher-employer role reversal trope.
Mm.
We have mistaken identity.
A little bit. Yeah.
Yeah, that is 100% mistaken identity. And marriage of convenience. And our favorite, secret treasure map.
Mm-hmm. And our main characters are Jared Ryder, Viscount Chilhurst, and Miss Olympia Wingfield.
Yes.
Well, Kelsey, shall we get into it?
We shall. So we start with a prologue that tells us that Jared Ryder is the opposite of his family and has no interest in the buried treasure of his ancestors. However, his family is, and that is why he is speaking with the man who bought his great-great-grandmother's, or so maybe it's one more great, I don't know. There's a lot of greats there, diary, which is said to hold the key to the treasure map. The man bought it for his niece, who loves old languages and code breaking, which explains the journal to a T. However, the journal is already in the ship's cargo hold. Luckily, Jared owns the ship the man is using. He tells his father and uncle that he will travel with the cargo the man is shipping back to his niece and offer for the diary when he gets there. No subterfuge. He literally just plans to follow the cargo, tell her the story, and buy the diary from her.
Now we jump to Olympia Wingfield, who is a blue stocking spinster and quite happy that way. However, she does now have the custodianship of three nephews who keep running off every tutor she hires for them.
When Jared meets Olympia, he is struck by a connection he wants to pursue. So instead of introducing himself by his title and telling her why he's really there, he tells her that yes, he is in fact a tutor hired by her uncle for the boys.
And thus he is drawn into the household that is anything but dull. He personally cannot abide chaos, as he's kind of like a captain sort, and does his best to establish a bit more order in the house. But it soon becomes clear the house needs more from him than that.
Turns out the neighbor, who was meant to help Olympia sell her uncle's cargo in London, has been giving her less than 10% of its actual worth and pocketing the money for himself. Then the same man's wife threatens to have Olympia's nephews taken from her because she is clearly unfit to trust a man who looks more like a pirate than her husband, the squire.
Yes, perhaps we should mention that Jack Ryder wears an eye patch.
Oh yeah, he's got one eye from a fight from back in the day.
Yeah.
He's a very rugged sort.
Yes. That takes everyone to London, where it is soon revealed that Jared is no tutor and in fact a viscount. Due to a rather inopportune meeting with his ex-fiancée, Jared introduces Olympia as his wife. So, of course, they must get married for real now.
This is where things get wild, because it turns out that the ex-fiancée's family are descendants of the man who was originally partners with Jared's ancestor, the one who hid the treasure. There's an old feud, and the ex-fiancé's brother thinks it's very unfair that his family is practically destitute while Jared's is rich. What he doesn't realize is that without Jared, the family would have been in the same boat.
Yes, Jared is the orderly moneymaker of the family. Now, things get sticky when it turns out that Jared's right-hand man, Felix, has been embezzling funds due to a gambling problem and is now trying to also harm Jared. At one point, he even tries to kidnap one of the nephews in an effort to extort money from Jared.
After breaking into the house and threatening Olympia, Felix is finally stopped with a very manly show of strength from Jared, and all's well that ends well.
Jared's ex-fiancée's family agrees with Jared to move past the feud, and a small party consisting of members of both families plan to set out after the treasure.
Jared has no interest in going. In fact, he wants to be with Olympia and the special kind of chaos she attracts.
Well, that is a very annotated summary of this wild
Sorry, guys.
Ride.
We're trying this new thing where we write really short summaries. So tell us what you think.
Yes.
Because that's actually important because it takes a lot of time for us to write the really detailed summaries. And a lot of time that prevents us from getting through these episodes really quickly because it just takes so much time to write them.
Yeah. And I'm not sure that that's what you guys come here for. I think I love a good summary, like to remind me of the book or to tell me if maybe I want to get into the book. But I think we're trying to find that sweet spot of how much of a summary is the right amount of summary.
Exactly. So this one was definitely on the more brief side. There was no added quotes in. There was no anything. It's just a real bare bones of the summary. There's a lot of fun details that did take place in this that I did not cover. But let us know what you think, because if this is what you guys like and this is fine, then that makes my life a lot easier and we can do it this way.
Yes. And also now I'm like super jazzed to talk about this book. So shall we first adjourn to the parlor?
We shall.
Well, listeners, thank you so much for joining us here in the parlor today. I just want to briefly mention our Patreon. As we said last episode, we hit our first goal and we are going to be launching some new goals. They're not 100% finalized, but I do want to mention that our next goal is definitely going to be community-based. So right now we are so thrilled to have 19 patrons. Like, can you believe it?
I cannot believe it. It's so special. Thank all of you for being our patrons and helping us put the show on. I mean, I think that for us, we were really getting to a point where we weren't – we saw we had listeners, but we weren't really sure if anyone was listening and cared. So it's just been so great to have your support and your appreciation. It's really kind of helped breathe new life into the show. So yeah, I mean, really appreciate it.
I think I've said it so many times. Podcasting feels like shouting out into a big void sometimes. And it's a time-consuming and kind of expensive hobby. And so like just to have a little bit of your support is it's more than the dollars that you're giving, right? Like it gives us so much encouragement and we just so appreciate it. So on that note, our next goal is definitely going to be, like I said, community-based. So when we have 25 patrons, we're going to be doing something. We don't have it totally finalized what we're doing, but if you want to be one of those six next patrons, you can join us on Patreon for as little as $3 a month. So head on over to patreon.com/T as in Tom, N as in Nancy Strumpets to explore all our tiers and become one of our patrons.
Yes. And if you are a new patron and have yet to receive your patron perks, I'm working on it.
We've had a busy couple of months, but we really do appreciate you all. And if you want to find us elsewhere, you can find us on Instagram at T as in Tom, N as in Nancy Strumpets. I'm going to be honest, we might not be on Twitter anymore.
Yeah, the Twitter's kind of fallen by the wayside.
Yeah.
Mainly because I got in charge of the social media. No lie, guys, I'm really bad at social media.
Well, I have some opinions and thoughts and feelings about Twitter at this moment.
I think so. Everybody does.
So I don't see us really going pushing that to be anything more than it is right now, which is an automatic tweet that our episode has come up. But you can also find us on Facebook/TNStrumpets and YouTube at T as in Tom, N as in Nancy Strumpets. We're everywhere with the same name.
Yes. So exciting. YouTube finally let us get our own handle.
Yes. And if you're listening to us on YouTube, now's a great time to click that thumbs up and hit subscribe before you forget. Liking and commenting on our videos and subscribing to our channel is a really wonderful way to let us know you like what we're doing.
And if you'd like to know ahead of time what we're reading each month, subscribe to our email notifications via our website. If you subscribe, you'll be the first to know what we're reading each month. Plus, you'll get all sorts of extras, including exclusive content from each of the authors who join us on the podcast. Our website is romancepod.com, and there you can find episodes, more information about us, and other resources. So take a look.
All right. So, Kelsey, general thoughts about this book.
So, this book was really fun. It was really fun. I definitely saw the age of it in, like, I think it's interesting because it's just in the way it was written, you know, and it's so interesting too. So I tried to pick up this side note, but more on that topic of how books are written and what speaks to you, because I think that's maybe why I haven't gone to read some of her books, because the writing is a little bit dated. It's not old language. It's not like Jane Austen or anything, but it's a little dated as far as how the scenes are set, the writing of it. Mm-hmm. But I picked up a newer contemporary romance novel, and oh my God, I couldn't. I got like two chapters in and I was like, I can't.
Of hers?
No, not of hers, of like some other authors. Oh, because the writing was literally like a cheesy rom-com, like on the Hallmark channel. And I was like, I would be into this if that's what I came to, if I was watching it, then the language and the setting of it would make more sense.
Yeah.
But because I was reading it in a book, I was like, I can't. So then I picked up Eva Lee's new novel and I read it voraciously and I was like, oh, happy place.
Yes.
So I definitely, it took a minute. I mean, it took the prologue to kind of get into the vibe of it, simply because, like I said, the language is a little older, very descriptive. It almost, it's funny because I think when I read these older books, there's almost a bit more gravitas to the way I read it. Like, it's just the way it flows in my brain. It doesn't, it's not the same clip, I think, as like a modern, or not a modern, but as like a today's romance novel, even a Regency. I feel like they kind of come in with a nice clip versus this one was like, I need to set the scene.
Yeah.
There's an old family legend.
I actually thought of that too when I was reading this, that this was a little bit older and I wanted to, because she's still writing tons. She's still writing tons. And I wanted to see if there was something new that came out from her. But her newest historical series is like 1920s. It's not like the Victorian age. So they look beautiful and amazing, but I'm just like, I'm stuck in the past. Sorry, I was a car.
You're stuck in the past.
I'm stuck in the past. 1920s is just too current for me. So I didn't get to read that because I am curious. I'm just like, you know, any author that's been writing for over 20 years, your writing evolves with the times.
Yeah, absolutely.
You know, if you're successful, which she most definitely is. So, so in that respect, I was hoping for that, but it wasn't. However, so there were definitely some like kind of antiquated things about this book. And I just have to say, though, I loved this book. I wrote very few notes as I was reading it. You said Love in the Afternoon set you off on just a reading like trail, right? And this book set me off on a reading trail. Before this was like the first book that I read after having a baby. And I just like, I couldn't stop. I have now read, hold on, let me count right now. One, two, three, four, five, six, seven, eight Amanda Quicks.
Wow. Dang.
Since July 26th. So, and I mean, like, look, it's like July 26th, then the next one I started July 26th, then the next one I started, or sorry, yeah, I read Deception in a day, and then I read the next one like in 2 days, and literally just like day after day, four or five books. And then I took a little break and came back. But like, I definitely found some of them to be incredible. I think my favorite ones have been, well, I'm looking at my star ratings here, Ravished and Mistress. I liked even a little bit more than this one. I thought they were interesting tropes. And then there were also some bonkers ones. Absolutely bonkers.
Were you telling me about one of those bonkers one the other day?
It's the one about Zamar, ancient Zamar, like this fake civilization. It was absolutely bonkers, but it's the kind of bonkers that's still written really well. And you just like can't turn away. You can't stop reading. Like, it's so good. Anyhow, there's a review. Maybe I'll read it at the end for that one. But to talk about Deception, I loved the flipped trope of the tutor, you know, the male tutor.
And I will say he was almost not full Mary Poppins, but he was almost a Mary Poppins-esque because it's like the unruly boys. And like with a quick look and a word, he like has them enraptured. And she's like, what is this man that like fixes everything? I need him in my life. I need to run away to London to protect my nephews. But obviously he's coming with me. And I love too that even after, my favorite thing is even after she found out he was a Viscount, she kept bringing up that she's like, well, I'm still your employer. He's like, are you? Are you?
But she's I loved just like, her though.
But no, she was just like, well, you're my employee. And as my employee, you need to do this. And he's like, sure.
Yes.
I thought it was hilarious.
So, but back kind of to the kind of old style of it, there was one thing, and you know me, if I read something in a book where it's like repeated over and over and over again, definitely sticks out in my mind. Do you know what I'm talking about in this one?
No.
Okay, woman of the world.
oh my gosh, yes. Oh my God, that was hilarious because he's actually been around the world and she's like, I'm a woman of the world. I've read about the world in my library.
Yes, and it's in this book 21 times.
Yeah, no, it was said a lot. That was definitely said a lot for sure.
And then reading more Amanda Quicks, in some of them, it seemed like it was in all of her books, to be honest. And then as some of the later ones, it stayed away. And there was a man of the world said every now and then too. So it's definitely probably like, I can kind of imagine that it was, you know, too much in the beginning and then it became maybe a joke for her and then she kind of kept it as like an Easter egg, you know, sort of thing. And I thought it was fun. The other thing that I think is interesting after reading a lot of Amanda Quicks, and in this one too, I believe it's in this one, there's some relationship that there seems to be a female-female relationship. Like there's two aunts or something or two.
No, there was the two aunts. So in this book, Olivia was raised by two aunts. One was her actual aunt and the other one was her aunt's partner.
Yes.
And then there was the ex-fiance who he actually – so it turns out – he broke it off with the ex-fiance because – and he just refers to catching her with a lover. Mm-hmm. But it was because her lover was – what everyone just assumes is her best friend, another married woman. So like, and it's funny because the brother thinks that Chilhurst made things up and he's like, she would never, like, you just wanted to get out of it. Like, how dare you? He's so mad at Chilhurst for like ditching his sister. And then it comes and then, but it's because his sister never told him, I like women. He caught me with a woman was clearly like, yeah, this isn't going to work as a marriage, even a marriage of like normal society marriage. This isn't going to work.
Well, this was written in 1993. Like, so we've been like, you know, calling out for more diversity and some representation and showing that the historical world wasn't all just straight people or straight white people or, you know, like, and she's just always been doing it. You know what I mean? Like, so I feel like, you know, I feel a little silly because it's like, it's been there. There have been people, obviously, that's why Fated Mates calls her a trailblazer because she's been setting the trail for so long. Mm-hmm. And it's just there and it's in all her books. She always has a little hint of the world is not just straight or white, you know, in her, in her settings. And I so appreciate that. She also, like, as we said in her bio, she does this kind of like romantic suspense or whatnot. So all her books have some sort of subplot other than just the falling in love. So a lot of the time they fall in love about halfway and their, you know, their troubles from that are fine. But then you get this other climax of like the subplot. So if it's like finding the treasure or it's somebody's trying to murder them or there's like a ghost something. Yeah, or both. It's such a fun ride. Like I've been having I had so much fun with all these books. I'm just like, yes, they're in love and now they're going to save the day and get the murderer.
I do say I always like when like the third act of the romance is not the third act of some misunderstanding or some miscommunication. It is in fact an outside source that they need to work then together and that's what really cements the relationship. relationship. Like, they love each other, but then going through the trials of this outside force that they had mm-hmm. no control over, or they are working together towards a common good, and that is really what cements their relationship, or that's kind of what maybe causes a little tension they have to work through. Like, I always appreciate that a lot more than, like, a misunderstanding. Was one thing with the Eva Lee that I just read, and in the third act there was like a misunderstanding, but they said it and then they kept away from each other for 3 days because they were so worried the other one was hurt, and I was like, I'm over it, get over it.
Mm-hmm.
Stupid.
Yeah. Well, let's talk a little bit deeper about our hero and heroine. So our hero, as we said, Jared, he's this like captain and the leader of his family. He thrives on it. Order because his, they are all so crazy.
And I love it. His family calls him the black sheep of the family because yeah. he's...
Damn it. She's going to wake the baby. Hold on.
Okay.
Can you get her?
Yeah.
Sorry, go ahead.
I love how he's the white sheep in a family of black sheep.
Yeah.
Like they keep referring to him as like he's just not passionate. The whole family is passionate and he just doesn't follow his passions. And Olivia the entire time is like, he is a very passionate man. He yes. really needs to control his passions.
Yes.
And it's so funny because his dad is like, are we talking about the same person?
Yeah.
And even yeah. Jared, when she's like, you're a very passionate man, he's like, no, I'm really not. And she's like, but you are.
Yeah. And you'd think that he would not want a woman who is kind of as chaotic good, for mm-hmm. lack of a better term, as Olympia. But he just falls for her so hard. He, you'd think that he wouldn't want someone that he has to, like, you know, tighten the laces for, right?
Yeah.
Like to keep her together. But no, he loves that. He thrives on it.
No,
however,
he does.
She also reciprocates. And so mm-hmm. like she is kind of what this like quirky, absent-minded, brilliant researcher for, mm-hmm. you know, and they just fit.
They just do. Because she's really like wonderfully kind. And again, like he yes. doesn't.
He's perceptive.
And she's kind and perceptive. And he sees that and her like intellect. And he's like immediately intrigued by her. And mm-hmm. then is like, I want to stick around. The best way I can stick around is to like ease her path and make things easier for her. Mm-hmm. Because like she's just got so much going on in her brain. Like, I'm just going to make sure she doesn't step off the cliff too much, like too many times. Like, I'll just ease her back, you know? And he loves that. Like, he loves that that's the role he can play in her life. He likes that she kind of gets him a little fired up, which, like, he didn't used to. But, she is the one person who can actually fire him up about things, which is new for him and interesting.
Yeah. I have a quote, actually, here that is in the first 10% of the book. It's, with a breathtaking, completely uncharacteristic disregard for common sense, he had consigned the Lightbourne Diary to hell. A mundane business arrangement was the very last thing he wanted to enter in with Olympia. Indeed, he could not bear the thought. He wanted her. Once that blazing realization had struck him, all that had seemed important was that he'd discover a way to stay here in the vicinity of this enchanting siren. He needed to explore this fierce, powerful, passionate attraction if it was the last thing he did on Earth. I mean, that's how they feel about each other.
I love it.
Yes. But it also, one thing about his character, I like this quote from only 4% in the book. It seems to Jared that he was forever rescuing one member of his family or another. Sometimes when he sat up late at night making notes in his appointment journal, he wondered fleetingly if someone would ever come along to rescue him.
Aw.
Yeah. And Olivia does. So anyhow, she does. What would you – or how about this? I'll go first. I want to rate Jared an 8. I really liked him. I thought he was just fun and great. I think he's an 8.
I would say he's at least an 8. Like,
yeah,
maybe a little bit more, because I really did like him. And he really had nothing I didn't like about him.
All right, fine. You're right. 8.5 at least.
No, he was really great. Like, honestly, he was really great. And there was nothing. He didn't have like secret macho tendencies. Like, he was very much like... He yeah. was very much who he was and, like, didn't, like, say – but he genuinely was a good person, I guess is what I'm trying to say, too. Like, There wasn't like he was great except for this. He was just kind of like a really fantastic guy.
Yes. Now, Olympia, we've already talked to about a little bit, and I have a quote here to kind of go with her. These are two separate quotes, but very, very Olympia that'll maybe give her a little bit of spice. So, mm-hmm. What about your reputation? Mrs. Norbury piped up anxiously. A movement at the corner of Olympia's eye caught her attention. She turned her head and saw that Jarrett was leaning very casually in the doorway. He smiled slightly at her. My reputation is my concern, Mrs. Norbury, Olivia said bluntly. Do not bother yourself about it. No one else has bothered about it for the past several years, and I have gotten along just fine. And soon afterwards, she says, I do not give a fig for my reputation. Olympia clasped her hands very tightly in front of her. Aunt Sophie always said that a reputation was nothing more than the world's opinion, and the world was frequently wrong. The important thing was one's honor, and she made it clear that that was a private matter between oneself and one's conscience. I am not the least concerned about what Miss Pettigrew thinks of me.
Yeah, you go, girl.
And
Aunt Sophie, yeah.
Yeah. She was fierce in her own little way. And mm-hmm. like, I liked almost the, I'm a woman of the world, but yeah. I know nothing of the world. Like, she very was like a bit naive in a lot of ways, but was still very secure in her knowledge. And I really liked her too. Honestly, I had nothing against her.
I think she's an 8.5 also.
What a great couple these two are.
Yeah. This book was so fun for me. So then we've got our favorite quote. Shall I go first while I have my quotes pulled up here?
Yes, you do that. And I will pull mine up.
I'm going to take one from the end of the book that has nothing to do with either of them since I already talked about them. And it's just that this is Jared's uncle or father. They're both there, and I can't remember which one is which. But Olivia's off kind of pulling away from something, and someone says, "What is going on here?" "Damn if I know," Magnus said cheerfully. "The lass has got the wind in her sails. We're merely following in her wake." I just loved like this piratey reference towards the end. And
yeah.
It's so good. And anyhow.
So mine also has nothing to do with either of the characters. I just thought it was a really descriptive piece of writing describing another character. And I just really liked it. So mm-hmm. I highlighted it. I think that's literally all I highlighted. I highlighted a few like good descriptions, and that was about it. I have very little highlights on this. I was just too busy reading. Anyway, so the quote is, "Graves was suitably named," Jared thought. The man was tall, stoop-shouldered, and cavernously thin. He wore the perpetually doleful expression of an undertaker. Jared had chosen him after interviewing several candidates from Bow Street because of the gleam of canny intelligence in the man's eye. Mm. Like, you can just, like, picture the person. Yes. I just thought it was, like, very descriptive and, like, I just really liked it.
Yes. I have one more little one that's between the two of them, Olympia and Jared, and they're kind of at odds. And this is like what you were saying with her being his employer, right? And saying mm-hmm. That is quite enough. Olympia stormed the rest of the way across the room to stand directly in front of the desk. I believe you are being deliberately difficult, sir. Quite possibly, he says. I am in a difficult mood. I just love the two of them.
Oh, wait. I have a really great – I think that encapsulates both people and this – both characters of this book.
All right. Tell me it.
Okay. It's a longer quote. This is Jared starting out. I will do what I think best, and I will make decisions accordingly. You will obey those decisions, madam. Olympia's mouth fell open. I will do no such thing. Not unless I happen to agree with those decisions, and I do not happen to agree with your edict regarding Mr. Seaton. Damnation, Olympia, I am your husband. You will do as I tell you. I will do as I bloody well please, just as I have always done. Olympia stormed. She heard the library door open behind her, but she paid no attention. You will listen to me, Mr. Chilhurst, and you will pay close attention. Do not forget that I took you on as a tutor in this household. When all is said and done, it seems obvious to me that you are still in my employ. That is a nonsensical thing to say, Jared shot back. You are my wife, not my employer.
I just love the two of them.
But this is what I meant about, like, that she's just constantly like, I'm your employer. He's like, we're married. No, you're not.
All right. And so now we are to our steaminess rating and our encounter counter. And we're also joined by a special guest. So if you hear some noises, Evie is with us now just for our finish up. Hopefully you can help let us finish the rest of the podcast, little lady. What do you think?
We'll find out. She always likes to make things difficult in my presence. yes. So for our encounter counter, we're wondering if it's two or three. Both Zoe and I forgot to count. And
we forgot to count. We're sorry.
So there's at least one or two in there for sure. For sure, one or two.
Yeah. And I feel like it was perfectly steamy. Like it was just like a nice cup of tea.
Yeah. No, perfectly steamy. Nothing like crazy raunchy. Nothing like crazy hot and spicy. But like definitely like could not resist the woman in the library, which...
Oh, yeah.
Fair enough.
I do remember the library scene. And I enjoy a good library scene. All right. Feminist recap.
Oh, total supporter.
Yeah. For a 90s book, too. I mean, obviously, like, they're in every decade that most, you know, the good authors are trying to be feminist. But I felt like this was really great. I love her. I love all the, you know, gay relationship representation.
But she also,
I loved Olympia's yeah. whole attitude. Like, it was great.
No, and Olympia really, like, she took charge of her life. I think that last quote I said really encompassed that in the sense of, like, her, like, Jared's literally trying to protect her. And she's like, I think you're being dumb. So, yeah. Like, don't tell me what to do.
Yeah, for sure. Yeah, and I read her other books. I love that these women get to go on the adventures with the men, and they're just vital parts of the story.
Yeah.
Yes, they are.
Oh, no. Sadness.
Let's bounce a little. Because we're getting to our final book rating, and aren't you excited to tell everybody what you think of the book? This was read while I was nursing you.
Oh, my gosh. So great. I think this book is definitely on the 8.5 level, so.
Me too. I think this book is not perfect, but I love it.
Yeah, no, for sure. I think that it's, I think it's a lot of fun. I think for our first foray into Amanda Quick, it was quite good. There wasn't any silly.
It certainly set me off.
Yeah, and I think it was, I mean, it had all the things that I originally loved about a lot of romance novels that I would read a lot of. You know, I love a romance novel. I mean, harkens back to our first episode of the podcast and our Julianne Long, where he's like, you know, escaping the gallows and there's like an extra plot against his life and a secret family history, you know, like... Those are the books I think that we got hooked into. So it was kind of nice to come back to that. I think that a lot of books are being more like rom-com, tongue-in-cheek, which I love. But at the same time, too, I love a crazy adventure story. And I love that that's what we got with this.
Yes, I can't agree more. I'm so glad we read it. I'm so glad we have our new author November now. And I can't wait to read more Amanda Quick. Again, the Zamar book, which one is that one? I would love to read this review. Maybe I'll put it in at the end of the episode. Maybe I'll read it separately when I'm editing it. Because, man, that review from – let me at least get the name of the book. It's called Mischief. The book Mischief is just absolutely bonkers. And
You know what? You should put the review on our Patreon.
Yes, I will do that. And the review from Goodreads user Roxana is just the most hilarious thing I've ever read. So check it out, listeners. Sorry, I think I got a little far away from my mic if some of the sound wasn't as the same recently.
Well, anyhow, there's a baby in the way, so...
Kelsey, what are we reading next?
Next time, we are reading A Duke in the Night by Kelly Bowen. This was a Patreon pick, and I have looked at Kelly Bowen's book. I've looked at Kelly Bowen's books. I'd never picked one up before. I think often because the covers were just a little too cheesy for me. And I know you're not supposed to judge a book by the cover, but I definitely do from time to time, especially if it's something new I haven't read before. I definitely have been my decision to pick it up has definitely been made or broken by the cover. So I was pleasantly surprised, and I proceeded to read all the books in this little trilogy of hers.
Yes. Well, on this note, I think it's time that we say thank you very much for listening. This was so fun to talk about and read, and I cannot wait for our next episode where we read A Duke in the Night by Kelly Bowen.
And may all your ever afters end happily.